Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. There is no such thing as a free lunch, ever, except the Registered Education Savings Plan. This literally is the closest thing I can think of to a free lunch. If you have kids, if you have grandkids, if you have nieces and nephews, or if you were yourself a kid once, you really need to be paying attention here. You really need to be thinking about an RESP because of the government grant and the magic of compounding. So this is a topic that we've talked about on the show before. This is a topic that we also get all sorts of questions about, even though we have talked about it before. So we're going to do it again with Craig Hughes. Craig is the Director of Tax and Estate Planning at IG Wealth Management, and he joins us today from Winnipeg, Manitoba. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. How are you?
I am great. My kid is now almost 14, and I followed my own advice on the RESP. So I am feeling very good with 13 years of a government grant and the compounding that goes alongside that. For those who are less familiar or who need a little bit of a reminder, what should they know about what an RESP is?
So, like you mentioned, the name, it's in the title. So it's a savings plan for education. So for post-secondary education, and that can cover a wide variety of things, university, college, trades, technical certifications. So there's a broad definition here when I speak to what education means. And basically what it is an individual can set up one of these RESP accounts for a beneficiary. So usually, a child, typically, or it could be a number of children. You can have numerous beneficiaries, for example, siblings. A parent could open what's called a family RESP and have multiple children under that plan. And basically, as money is added to that plan, the government also puts money in there. And they do that in a couple of ways. One is the Canada Education Savings Grant. So for every dollar that you put in, the government will put 20 cents in, so 20% basically. And that's up to $500 a year the government will put in. So for example, if you put $2,500 into an RESP, the government will also add $500. If you missed a year, that's fine. That grant carries forward to a maximum of $1,000 in a year. So for example, you could put $5,000 into an RESP in a year, and if you've missed a year, you could receive up to $500 in grants, as well as for low income families, there's ability to receive additional grants as well. They have what's called a Canada Learning Bond, where for low income families as well, it's possible to receive up to $2,000 over a child's lifetime in bond. Which can also add to that RESP. And then as you mentioned, it grows, it's typically invested within the account, and it grows on a tax deferred basis. So it continues to compound without having annual taxation on that amount. And then lastly, just as an overview, when funds are withdrawn, that growth and those grants are taxable, but typically they're taxable to the student. And so often, at that point in time, they're in a low income tax bracket because they're in education, and they might be eligible for tuition expenses and things like that, various credits, and so often that money can then be withdrawn at a very low or nil tax rate when they're actually pursuing post-secondary education.
The question that prompted this interview was when should I open up an RESP for my kid? I have my answer, but you go first.
Well, the earlier the better. Obviously, like I said, you can receive up to $500 in grants every year. The lifetime amount that you can receive from the government is $7,200. So the earlier you can do it, you can start to receive that $500 a year and build that up over time. And obviously, that's going to take a number of years to get to that $7,200. As well, you're starting to, like I said, the money is invested. You're starting to initiate that tax deferred, compounding growth. So the sooner you can do it, the better. The money will grow over time. We're talking about a longer time horizon here. given its post-secondary education. So you could be talking 18 years or more. And so that long time frame gives you a lot of, you know, period to build that money. But I get it. I have two kids too, and it, you know, there's lots of priorities going on when.
Sure. Now, you are more measured than I am. I am evangelical about this. I'm highly excitable about the RESP. So my answer, which is not different from yours, but my answer is literally the day you get the social insurance number, literally that day, you open up an RESP. That is my answer. So sooner the better, but I say the day you get the SIN. The process is pretty simple, right? And you can open up an RESP at any bank, credit union, investment shop, brokerage, right? It's pretty wide.
Yeah, it's a very common savings plan type. So for sure, if you go to any financial institution, larger financial institution, that they'll be able to offer an RESP. Yeah, so it's very simple to do it. It'll be a case of signing a few forms. And once you start depositing money, you'll start to receive that grant. Yeah. And you know, it's hard to beat that as a rate of return because you've been given free money essentially.
Yeah.
And so great way to start saving for your child's future. You know, because obviously post-secondary education is going to help them realize their goals as to what they want to do when they're older and set themselves up for life. So it's
so that's the open it. Then there's the fund it. And finally, there's the invest it. On the fund it, if you can swing the cash flow, please tell me you're a fan of the automatic monthly contribution.
Yeah, for sure. Then you set it, let it go. It's part. It's almost. It's an expense at that point. You can budget for that. You know when it's going to come out and for how much, and you leave that, and you're not tempted to divert that to other things. So for sure, as well from an investment perspective, you're not lumping money into the market, which, you know, if you time it wrong, that could be a bad thing. So the more you can spread it out and do it periodically, typically that smooths out your returns well, like I said, from a budget perspective, it's easy.
And I don't want to minimize that it is not easy for a family to find $250 per child per month. I know for some families, that is just an unimaginable situation. But if you can swing it, that automatic monthly contribution is genius. Okay, so you've got open it, then fund it, then investment, then invest it. What guidance would you provide in terms of where it should go? I mean, you've got somewhere between, 15 and 18 years before this money is going to be withdrawn. And I say 15 because if it's connected to equities, you're not going to want to keep it in equities until the day the tuition is due. That could be fraught. But what would you say? What are some things that you'd say people should keep in mind as they think about investing that money?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, ideally, you'd work with a financial advisor at the financial institution. They'll help you with that. Make sure you're diversified. Usually in the earlier years, you probably want to be more growth orientated, stocks and things like that. You know, because you've got a longer time horizon, so you can deal with the ups and downs of the market. As you approach your child reaching 18, 19, you know, whenever they're thinking about pursuing post-secondary education, usually then you'd want to start moving towards fixed income, you know, preserving that capital. And certain financial institutions will offer what's called target education portfolios. So they'll start off equity orientated, and then over time, they'll shift that asset allocation towards fixed income investments just to try and get the growth in the early years and try and preserve your capital when you need it the most in order to start funding that education.
Of course, the last step here is, so you've opened it, you've funded it, you've invested it, and then you got to withdraw it. What are some things to keep in mind as you move into that phase? I mean, some kids will take, let's say it's just one individual and they're good planning on doing a four-year program of some sort. Some will take it in each of those 4 years, but it doesn't necessarily have to be equal by year. What does it have to be? It has to be a registered institution, and the list is long. What else should people know about how they withdraw that money?
Yeah, the list is long. Full-time studies qualify as well as part-time studies. Very long list. As long as post-secondary education is being pursued, shouldn't really be a problem. So the contribution, so the money that you've put into it, if the individual is pursuing post-secondary education, that can be pulled out tax-free. So very easy to deal with the capital of the plan. In terms of the growth, you know, any earnings as well as those grants or any bonds that have been paid into the plan, in the first 13 weeks that somebody's enrolled full time in a program, in 2023 they've increased this. You can withdraw up to $8,000 of that income, so you can supplement that with the contributions. But you can pull out up to $8,000 of the income, $4,000 if it's a part time course. And then thereafter, there's not really any restrictions. There is a reasonableness test. So as long as you're pulling out less than $20,000, $7,000 of income, you're not going to hit that test. So that shouldn't be a concern. But basically, you can pull that out. You have to show proof of enrollment to the financial institution. And then you can start pulling out the contributions and the income. Usually it gets paid to the beneficiary, to the student. It's taxed to them, like I said, at low tax rates. And then they can use that for a wide variety of educational expenses. So it's not just tuition. It can be used for housing.
It's keg parties. It's kegs. It's kegs.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's also kegs.
Exactly.
Yeah. One quick thing before we go. Every parent needs to have a certain level of diluted optimism, because how would we get through the day if we didn't have that? Yep. And not every kid is going to go to post-secondary. They're just not. So what happens if you do all this saving? You save for almost 20 years and your kid does not go.
Right. So there's a few options. So as I mentioned at the beginning, you can have the concept of a family RESP, or even if you don't, if you have an individual RESP, it's possible to shift that income and the contributions over to a sibling fairly easily. If that's just not an option, then the contributions, like I mentioned, can always be withdrawn tax-free, so that money's not lost. The grants and bonds would not be paid out of the plan if nobody's attending post-secondary education, but the growth and the earnings, that can be paid out to the subscribers, so the person who set up the RESP, and that can be paid to them. It is taxed, but if they have RSP room, they're able to put it into an RSP, which eliminates any taxation, and there's also an additional 20% tax, but that can be eliminated. If you have RSP, right. So the results.
And they've got time. These young people have time. What is it, 35 or something like that? The RESP can sit there for, that's a long time.
Yeah, the RESP can be open up to 35 years after the year of setup. So it's not something that you need to make a decision on right away, and circumstances change. So it's not something you need to close right away.
Craig.
It doesn't work out at 18, so.
Craig, thank you for your time. This is a really critical conversation to have with parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, and we need to have it over and over again such that we increase the number of young people who have the benefit of these government grants and the compounding interest. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you.
Craig Hughes, Director of Tax Planning at IG Investments. He joined us today from Winnipeg, Manitoba.